The greatest trick the devil ever pulled was convincing the world he didn't exist.
I saw a pale horse,
the beast,
foretold in the book of Revelation.
This is not a human child.
Isn't that an angel?
Satan! Armageddon is almost upon us.
Order the use of nuclear weapons.
The world is a fine place and worth fighting for.
From one end of the world to the other, I will oppose you.
Welcome to the end of the world.
Wrestling not against flesh and blood, but against powers and principalities. This is PID Radio.
As a new month breaks across the heartland of America, I am Derek Gilbert.
And despite evidence to the contrary, I think I'm still Sharon Gilbert. I don't know. NaNoWriMo began today, and I'm at a loss.
You've written nothing?
I've written something. I don't know if it's any good or not, but I've written something. And I did a lot of research today, and I made cinnamon rolls.
Well, that was a big plus. That was a really big plus. Well, welcome to the Cinnamon-Scented Bunker for November 1st, 2010. NaNoWriMo, by the way, is National Novel Writing Month, something that
we participate in every year, have since 2002, and you have to write 50,000 words in 30 days.
Insanity.
Yeah. So, well, I didn't quite make my word count today.
No,
I wrote about 1,000 words.
I've written nil, but
you write that novel every year, honey.
And one of these days, I'll get it right. Well, we're also on the verge of the 2010 election, the midterm elections here in the United States. And
tomorrow.
Polls are correct. The Republicans are looking at the biggest midterm swing in decades, perhaps a generation?
Maybe since the Newt Gingrich days.
Mm-hmm. And interesting comment by one of the, an original thinker who writes for WorldNet Daily, Vox Day. He's got his own blog. You can find voxday.blogspot.com, in which he points out, something that with which we would agree, and that is that as Christians, we are told by many prominent Christians that we should vote Republican because they're the party of family values. We've been told this since the Reagan administration.
We've been programmed to think that.
If
you're a Christian, you vote to the right.
Right. But this is kind of interesting because last week, a couple of major evangelical leaders released video messages to to the internet. David Barton, for one, of Wall Builders, who is probably the preeminent apologist for the faith of our founding fathers.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, he basically said that we need to vote. It's our Christian duty to vote. And we need to vote for righteousness. We need to vote on values. Well, okay, I can agree to that, and I can agree with his reasoning that we will answer to God someday for our actions here on planet Earth, including the votes we cast at the ballot box. But Chuck Colson released a video message last week in which he said, look, the Republicans barely tossed us a bone in talking about family issues and moral values in this election and promising to uphold them and try to fight for the rights of the unborn and so forth. They barely mentioned in their platform they're running strictly on the economy in 2010. And he's right. And so far, that appears to be a winning strategy based on the polls. So if you're a Christian who's going to answer to God someday for your vote and you agree with Chuck Colson that neither major party offers you anything in the way of righteousness, to use David Barton's word, do you still have a moral prerogative, a moral directive to vote? Do you still have to cast a ballot?
I can't find anywhere in Scripture where it says, thou shalt vote.
No, I mean, we should be good citizens.
Mm-hmm.
We're called to live peaceably with our neighbors.
Mm-hmm.
Our walk, our lives, the way we live, is our testimony. But if neither party is, and I think there's evidence to suggest that neither party really, at the national level anyway, really cares about family values any farther than it will get them some votes, do we as Christians have a duty, a responsibility to support either one of the major parties?
Well, here's another one. Do votes count?
Well,
I mean, literally, do votes make a difference?
Yeah.
If the votes are jiggered.
That's a really good question. A couple of years ago, I interviewed Bev Harris of blackboxvoting.org.
Yes, I remember that.
Yeah.
That would have been a good one to put up tonight instead of
yeah,
us.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that may be the archived show that goes up for the View from the Bunker podcast this coming weekend. But yeah, I just thought that was an interesting, a couple of interesting viewpoints that came out last week. Barton on the one hand, mm-hmm. who says we have a moral duty to vote.
Moral imperative.
Exactly. But Chuck Colson is correct. Neither one of the major parties is really offering anything to Christian voters in terms of support for righteousness. So, what do we do?
He's always under somebody's wing. He's always being... I'm sorry, I don't trust Chuck Colson. Who is benefiting by Colson saying that?
Well, that's a good question. I don't know. Of course, Chuck Colson was one of the principals behind the Manhattan Declaration,
mm-hmm.
which is an ecumenical document that brings together Jews, Roman mm-hmm. Catholics, evangelical Christians, and so forth, even moderate Muslims, mm-hmm. I suppose, in stating support for certain...
There goes Sam.
Yeah, he said, this political talk, I'm out of here, it all stinks. Certain political and social...
it's like the Hegelian dialectic within the right. I mean, to have Colson say one thing and Barton say another thing.
Yeah.
Are we supposed to vote somewhere in the middle?
I don't know. But, the cognitive dissonance is making my head explode.
I know. I
must
see.
Vote, but neither party offers me anything to vote for. What do I do?
It's like that scene in Star Trek where Spock outsmarts the
calculate
the
pi
android.
To the final digit.
No, he says, everything I tell you is the truth. All right. I am lying.
That was Doctor Who. Doctor Who did that, too.
Yes.
Yes.
But Star Trek did it first.
Oh, that's true. Yes. Of course, the Doctor might have done it in the past.
When you're dealing with
yes.
time travel.
So anyway, but, that's just something to think about. And I think the whole point is this. What our founding fathers believed, what any politician says he or she believes, or rather the party to which that politician belongs and what that party claims to believe, mm-hmm. you have to come down to weighing it against Scripture. What does... the Bible call us to do. And in truth, if you don't see a directive in there to vote, then on what does David Barton or anyone say that you as a Christian must go out and cast a ballot?
Well, I'll tell you what we are directed to do, and that is to pray for the leaders.
Yes, even the ones we don't like.
I know, and that's the way you can affect the most change is to trust in God and pray for your leaders.
Yeah. And
that doesn't feel like you're really... doing anything, does
it? No,
it
doesn't, does it?
It makes us sort of dependent upon God.
Yeah.
Oh. Imagine a Christian having to be dependent upon God.
Yeah. Well, I've said this before. I'll say it again. I think the fact that the Christians of the first century, the apostles who wrote lines like, pray for our leaders, pray for the emperor, were writing during the reign of just such pleasant, friendly fellows as Nero and Caligula, gives some added weight to the directive. So anyway, we'll see what happens. The Republicans, by the way, not really offering us a whole lot, even just in terms of political initiatives. Vox puts it really, in his usual wit, that the John Boehner rationale for voting Republican mm-hmm. says that the Republicans have listened. They've heard the voices of the American people, the Tea Party movement, the outrage against bigger, more intrusive government. And they have a plan in their first year of government to reduce government spending by about $100 billion in the first year alone. Well, that's great, except the annual budget for the United States in 2010 was $3.55 trillion with a T.
Mm-hmm.
So if you were to put this in terms of driving a car that was headed toward a cliff, the edge of a cliff, at 70 miles an hour, the Republican plan would slow the car down to about 65.8 miles per hour.
Mm-hmm.
Good plan, guys! So,
well, let's get away from politics.
Yes.
Last
yes.
night was Halloween.
Mm-hmm.
You know what? We had kids on our street, and I'm not even going to get into the spiritual aspect of Halloween. The reason I'm bringing it up, first of all, we had kids in our street. Make your kids, when they wear their costumes, wear some kind of little light thing. We had kids out there in black costumes no flashlights.
Right.
And traffic just speeding down the street. So there's your tip of the day.
Yeah, carry a glow stick or something.
Yeah, doing something like that. Flick, your Bic lighter. Have them light up a cigarette so you can see it. No, don't do that.
Sarcasm. Okay.
The reason I wanted to bring up Halloween, actually, was because last night in Wilmington, North Carolina, there were a number of 2 in the morning or so, the bars are letting out, and there were quite a number of young people who were a little bit happy in the streets. Now, there is a video of this event, and we will link to it at Instapaper and in the show notes.
Right,
so if you log into PID Radio as our username, you can add our starred items and peer through them at your leisure. This group in the video, you can see that there is a rather exuberant young man who is in costume, and he has a very large scimitar-like weapon.
Yeah, uh-huh.
And he looks like he's wearing sort of terrorist garb. And
okay.
Strangely enough, he begins chanting USA.
Well, okay.
And the crowd chants along with him. I'm wondering how many people in the crowd really noticed that this man was at the center of the video. But within a matter of a few minutes, the people in the video begin coughing. And you can hear them say a few expletives, but they're astonished that they have apparently been gassed with tear gas. It was later reported by the police that, no, it was pepper spray, which it is standard procedure by the police in Wilmington, North Carolina, to disperse any crowd that the police feel is bigger than they can handle with pepper spray.
According to the news report, thousands of people in this crowd and only 23 officers on the scene, so therefore they felt justified.
I've read anywhere from 200 to 400 to thousands. I think it all depends on how you're trying to report it to.
This is where all the extra people that weren't counted at the Glenn Beck rally by the major media showed up in Wilmington.
Now, we should do a Photoshop look. Okay, let's. Apparently, someone used the stamp tool. This guy's in here 17 times. I think that that's horrendous that the police did that. Now, what I find interesting is that a number of regime changes have begun spontaneously.
Really?
Well, throughout the various countries of the world, that you might have a group of students who begin chanting something.
Right, right.
And whether or not they are legitimately spontaneous events is up for grabs. Because as we know, that there are often groups on the ground that are fomenting
violence. Yeah.
So, I don't know. Could this be something that we see in other cities? Maybe.
Just a test?
I don't know. That's what I thought when I saw it. I thought, okay, is this a test to see how people react to this?
Well, that's a good question.
Or is this just something that the police thought, okay, well, it looks scary to me.
Let's just gas him. Yeah. Well, only a few arrests at this event in Wilmington, North Carolina, and only a few minor fights. But apparently police felt that it was dangerous enough that they needed to deploy the pepper spray. And,
across the world in Baghdad, there was a different type of police event. There was a church in Baghdad that over the weekend was taken captive. There was a car bombing outside at Catholic church, and suicide bombers ran in and held the congregation captive, hostage. The police raided the place within a few hours, and by this time, some of the... If I'm to understand it correctly, by that time, at least 15 people were dead who had been beaten to death.
Oh, my.
And perhaps executed in other ways by the gentlemen who were holding them captive. I use gentlemen in quotes.
Yeah.
The police stormed the place, and the suicide bombers began letting off their bombs. 52 people plus, the number keeps rising, are now dead.
Yeah, this was a Catholic church in Baghdad, the Our Lady of Salvation Chaldean Catholic Church, which the Chaldean Catholic Church in Iraq, that goes back a long, long time. In fact, if I remember correctly, these are people who and maybe I'm wrong about this, but I think this is the group that believes themselves to be descendants of the Assyrians who lived in that area.
Oh, that's really interesting.
A long, long time ago, and were converted when the faith, Christian faith, spread from Israel in the first and second century.
Well, there's a video attached to the story at The Guardian, and it is you can see the young man who's being interviewed. He's terrified.
Yeah. Well, that's understandable. Boy, yeah, horrible. 52 dead confirmed, 50 more injured, and the death toll continues to rise. Yeah, the history of the Roman Catholic Church, or the Chaldean Church, goes back hundreds and hundreds of years. But a long history in that part of the world. Things got very bad for Christians, ironically, after the fall of Saddam Hussein. Saddam Hussein, who was a brutal man, did keep a lid on sectarian and tribal violence inside the country there.
Because he was a secular ruler.
Yeah.
For the most part, he really was. He didn't take sides at all.
Right. Tariq Aziz, who was his foreign minister, is a professing Christian. That's not something you're going to find inside Iraq whenever they finally settle their differences over the election. It was held months ago, and they're mm-hmm. still squabbling and scrambling for power there. But
To expect Iraq to have sudden peace is ridiculous, because it's a construct of the UN. I mean, it's a several tribal regions that were forced to go together and call themselves Iraq.
Right. Well, even before that, a construct of the aftermath of World War One, when the Ottoman Empire broke.
Oh, that's right. That's right. That's right.
So. You're right. And there are tribes, and of course you've got the Sunni-Shia conflict, and the two of them hate one another only marginally less than they hate the United States for being there.
And frankly, right now we're seeing an Iranian intrusion into Iraq, and
absolutely.
It may be the revival of the Iraq-Iran war.
Yeah. And we saw this coming back you claim any prophetic gift here, but, you know, several years ago, it just seemed like us, if you just thought through this logically, okay, the country is predominantly Shia. The Sunnis, who were the minority, were essentially had power under Saddam Hussein because he was nominally Sunni. Iran is the only other nation in the world that is predominantly Shia. And so it seemed to us logical to assume that if we went in there, removed Saddam Hussein, and said, okay, now you guys write your own constitution, that the majority of the country would wind up with the majority of the power, and that on theological grounds, we would create Iran's new best friend. And in fact, the new constitution does enshrine Sharia as mm-hmm. a part of the legal code. Well, mm-hmm. what did we think going in there?
Going
to suddenly create a Western-style democracy?
It's a major foot in the door for Iran.
It is, which means, of course, we have to stay there to keep them out.
Well, mm-hmm. and we still are there. We're just calling ourselves something else.
Yes.
Speaking of something else,
mm-hmm.
Australia is in the news. I posted a story a few weeks ago at PID News about a counselor, a psychologist,
mm-hmm.
who had belonged to a cult, C-U-L-T, and had essentially said that when she, told her, cult members, followers, that she was the Queen of Atlantis, a member of the 12 hierarchy of, I'm trying to see exactly what she, 12 members of the Intergalactic Council of the Universe, and a reincarnation of Jesus Christ. This is a woman named Natasha Lakaev, and she was with the Universal Knowledge cult.
Mm-hmm.
Now you tell me today that there's yet another cult, and this one, it has a strikingly familiar look.
Yeah, this is really interesting. We mentioned last week, and we did it in kind of an offhanded way, talking about the WikiLeaks release of documents related to the Iraq War.
Mm-hmm. And how we thought it maybe was a cutout for the
CIA. Well, we did that in kind of an offhanded way. Frankly, from where we sit, with the information we have at our disposal, which really is no different than what you have at your disposal, we can't say for certain who's behind WikiLeaks, and
tell you what we think.
Exactly.
Which may or may not have any substance to it.
That's true. Absolutely. Well, we got an email. A good friend of ours said, you may be right about that, but the CIA, there are many factions within the intelligence community. There's no way to know which one might be behind WikiLeaks. Absolutely correct. Also absolutely correct in that the documents, which point to Iran's intervention and interference in Iraq makes Iran look like the bad guys.
Mm-hmm.
Who benefits from making Iraq, or rather Iran, look like the bad guys? And by the way, we should point out, as with any nation, not all of the people are on board with the government leader's program at any given time. There is a benefit to the string pullers to get us to believe that all Iranians are evil. Right. There are reformers inside Iran, just as there are people inside the United States who disagree with whatever the government's doing at any given time. So anyway, just keep that in mind.
Having said that,
it does turn out that Julian Assange, who is the guy behind WikiLeaks.
Don't you love saying that name?
Julian Assange. It sounds like a designer.
It does.
Should have a fancy logo and brightly colored clothing. He, if you've seen a picture of Mr. Assange, you notice that he's got this very striking, almost platinum blonde hair, which Dave Emery, who hosts a weekly radio program called For the Record, and you'll find it online at spitfirelist.com, pointed out that Mr. Assange is the son of a woman who was deeply involved in a cult called the Santinikin, I'm not going to get this right, Santinikin Park, S-A-N-T-I-N-I-K-E-T-A-N, the Santinikin, we'll let it go at that, Park Association, which was run by a woman in Australia, by the name of Anne Hamilton Byrne. And according to just news reports that Dave Emery pulled from Australian press sources, found that Hamilton Byrne conditioned children in this cult, the children of cult members, with drugs, sensory deprivation, sleep deprivation, torture, and ritual sexual abuse. Now, does this or does this not sound very much like the kind of thing that Russ Dizdar describes in the work of the multiples that he has dealt with over the years? Well, anyway, Assange claims that his mother fled from a guy. I mean, she was connected to a guy who was part of the cult, fled from him. They spent several years on the run. And again, this is speculation on Emery's part. We're just kind of, and I'm just summarizing very, very briefly. And I'll put a link to the shows that he did on the WikiLeaks situation and Assange's connection to this Santinikin Park Association. In the show notes at PIDradio.com. But if Assange was, in fact, one of the children who was manipulated and conditioned via these mind control techniques, that he may, in fact, still be doing things, perhaps even without his knowledge, that are at the beck and call, at the behest of these controllers, these intelligence guys, and that these leaks, as we speculated last week, are in fact to serve some purpose for some group inside the intelligence community.
The old controlled leaks thing.
Maybe not the U.S. intelligence network, but perhaps British and Australian intelligence.
Well, anyone sitting there and thinking, boy, Sharon's been quiet during all of this. It's because my sister Debbie just arrived for her lunch break. So I went down and said hello to her. I hadn't seen her in 3 days. And now that I'm back,
yes.
I'm looking at these pictures of this group and thinking, well, not yeah. only Village of the Damned, if you've mentioned that.
No, I have not yet, actually. The reason
that, look like.
The white hair, yeah, apparently this was one of the features, thanks for reminding me, one of the features of the children of the cult members, this Santinikin, I'll get this before the end of the show, Santinikin Park Association, is the children all had their hair dyed a very striking platinum blonde, like from the movie Children of the Damned.
Yes. And it also reminds me of a couple of episodes of Millennium.
Yeah.
There was one with the remote viewers.
Right, right, right.
It was the season 3 opener.
Right, right.
And there was another one with the children of the guy who was in the... What's it called?
The Iron Lung.
Yes, the Iron Lung. Thank you very much.
Which I think was part 2 of that episode, wasn't it? Of that season opener?
You know, I can't remember if it was or not. I don't think so. I think part 2 ended when he found the women in the missile silo or whatever.
Yeah.
But, there's a theme going on out there with this notion of genetically similar siblings who all sort of have a creepy look to them. Mm-hmm. And this goes along with, now I'm really going to go far afield, so get your hats on, people. Get those tinfoil
hats. The foil
hats,
yes.
Get the foil hats out. For those who are familiar with the Nordic appearance of some of the alien beings.
Right, right.
Well, I would say that that's pretty darn Nordic when you have platinum hair and blue eyes.
That's, yes. Mm-hmm.
Hmm.
Interesting, too, that, and again, this is something that Emery brings out in documents in his two most recent shows for the record, called Wiki of the Damned and Leak This. The hosting, the web hosting for WikiLeaks is being provided by a Swedish political party, which is
pirates.
Yeah, the pirate party.
Yeah.
Which is financed by a fellow named, and I want to make sure I get this correct so I'm not accusing wrong names. It's Carl, and I want to get the last name correct. But anyway, he's well known as one of the...
Lundstrom.
Lundstrom, thank you. One of the preeminent financiers of, fascist causes in Europe. So kind of an interesting, bizarre connection there that WikiLeaks is showing. And this is another interesting point. There's a website on the that has gained some notoriety for leaking documents here in the U.S. called Cryptome, cryptome.org.
Mm-hmm.
And the fellow behind Cryptome was invited to be one of the founding members of WikiLeaks.
The turned hackers.
Yeah, and he bailed on it pretty quickly when he found out that WikiLeaks was, instead of approaching it the way he does, which is volunteers contributing just to try to, you know, let some sunshine in on things that shouldn't be secret. WikiLeaks was going out and actually chasing guys like George Soros for funding. And they're talking about raising millions of dollars. And this fellow, John Young, who runs Cryptome, was like, I don't want to be a part of that. So interesting. Also, just an observation, conservatives, especially neocons here in the U.S., have suggested that Julian Assange be picked up by the United States and tried for treason or something. And there, you can make a case that he is jeopardizing soldiers in the field with some of the information that's been released.
Well, at least that's what we're told.
At least that's what we're told. But like, I didn't say how good a case. You can make a case, though, that this is stuff that some of it should have been kept secret. But it's interesting how some of those folks were all in favor of WikiLeaks because that was the original source of the hacked emails from East Anglia University's climate research unit, ClimateGate. So, and I guess it all depends on what's being leaked as to whether it's bad or not.
Mm-hmm.
Now, again, you know, leaking climate research data doesn't relate to soldiers under enemy fire, but still, it's kind of interesting how things turn so quickly out there, depending on what we're supposed to think.
I know, and we're being told what to think, and I don't know if it's an October surprise or not, since today is November 1st, but the airplanes that were supposedly transporting bombs to various locations late last week,
mm-hmm.
Friday. Was it Friday?
I think.
Sorry, NaNoWriMo
Friday.
Has totally stole my brain. It's just, wasn't much left there to start with. NaNoWriMo's taking it all.
Taking what's left, huh?
Today we're finding out that there is a call to expand the military investigation into the plane, UPS plane that went down in Dubai September 2nd, I think.
Thinking that might have been a trial run or something? Or?
Well, that's what they're thinking now. But interesting that at least that one, sadly, did crash. And nothing really crashed from the ones that were revealed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the little toner bombs.
Yeah, yeah.
With the little things sticking out of them.
So, we'll see how that story develops, because there is a call also for...
My microphone just tried to attack me.
I saw that. It jumped right out there.
I know.
That trying to increase American military presence in Yemen, which is just what we need, another front in the global war on terror.
Well, I think it's really interesting. The story that I've linked to here from the Atlantic Wire is essentially saying not only that we should expand the military presence, but let's send in the covert teams.
Mm-hmm.
Z.
Yeah. Well, yeah, they've been kicked out of Afghanistan. They need to pick up some new contracts to keep the stockholders happy.
Oh, I have to say one more thing. You'll appreciate this. I want to see if I linked it. I think I did. I think it's here. Okay, the Bank of England I'll come in again. The Bank of England chief, Mervyn King, is now proposing, get this, wait for it, eliminating fractional banking.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Fractional reserve banking.
Yes, he says that it's caused problems.
Okay, well, watch for Mr. King's obituary here in the next
Well, that's just it, because on the flip side, back in February, Bernanke essentially said, you know what, we should just do away with that fraction of any kind of reserve banking. We shouldn't have to keep any kind of a reserve. In other words, what's going on is essentially...
Oh, wait a minute. Maybe I'm catching the wrong drift here. Okay.
Banks are essentially printing money because it's just digits in the air.
Right, sure.
So that's essentially printing money, which is against what they were... That's against the law.
Fractional reserve banking means that banks have to or cannot lend more than a certain multiple of the actual money that they have in the vaults. So if they've
exactly.
got $100,000, if they they can perhaps loan out $1 million. But if they're saying there should okay, I thought when you said fractional reserve banking,
here's what he said: that forcing the riskiest banks to hold capital several times the magnitude of requirements at present, that he says is radical thinking. Mervyn King, the governor of the Bank of England, has tonight made a big intervention into the debate on banking reform. In a speech at Buttonwood, New York, he listed much more radical proposals. Also, the Volcker rule-style enforced breakup of banks into speculative and non-speculative arms. There's a whole, if you link to this, this is a rather... It's more than my little NaNoWriMo brain can wrap around at the moment. But it seems to me that he is saying, if I understand this correctly, the opposite from Bernanke. And Bernanke earlier this year said he wants to do away with fractional banking.
Well, I'm going to do a little research on that.
Because with the reserve.
Either way, that would be a pretty significant change.
Okay,
doing away with the reserve.
Here's what he said. The Federal Reserve believes it is possible that ultimately its operating framework will allow the elimination of minimum reserve requirements, which impose costs and distortions on the banking system. In other words...
So they could basically... You're absolutely right. What that means is the banks, which can already print money, it's just they're limited as to how much they can print by the reserve that they must keep
exactly.
in the vault.
Exactly.
If you do away with the minimum reserve,
they
can print as much as they want, except probably subject to whatever the Fed tells them they can do.
Mm-hmm.
But you're right. They can essentially create money out of even more... Let me come in again. They can create even more money out of thin air than right now. And the odd thing is that ever since they started cranking up the printing presses after TARP, banks have been stuffing money into their vaults left and right. If you look at the amount of money, and I'll have to dig this up because I wasn't mm-hmm. prepared for this, but I'll do this for tomorrow. Check into how much money the banks have
in their
vaults.
And we've even gone past our time because I brought this up. I knew I shouldn't have done this. We're going to go long, but which is a good thing to do.
Yes. Overtime.
Go long.
You know,
we'll have to talk more about this tomorrow.
Absolutely.
We'll do a bit of reading and come in again.
Yes. And until then, I'm Derek Gilbert.
I'm Sharon Gilbert. Bye-bye, everybody. NaNoWriMo.
Thanks for listening. PID Radio is a production of the PID Radio Network, a division of Gilbert House. Please visit our website at PIDradio.com, where you'll find show notes and links to connect with us on Twitter and Facebook. We wish to thank all those who help undergird and underwrite our ministry through prayers, feedback, and donations. To contact us directly, email us at radio@peeringintodarkness.com. Opening music adapted from The Alchemist's Tower by Kevin MacLeod, www.incompetech.com. Closing music, New Day Coming by Steve Grace, stevegrace.com. Content, copyright Gilbert House, and is licensed under Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derives 3.0 Unported License. For more information, see creativecommons.org.
Gonna step up to the microphone, say it loud and clear.